You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast, your complete source of information, news, and analysis of your awesome town crew.
Open wide for some soccer!
You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
We passed then.
When?
Just now. We're at now, now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
Now.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Soon.
This club, and any sports franchise for that matter, should be a sacred community asset. That is how we're going to treat the crew. Our goal will be to take the crew to be one of the standard bearers in the league.
And look at the Nord deck there. The crew faithful, ever so loud. Yeah, buddy!
And it is the Massive Report, live from beautiful, scenic, awesome town, Ohio, at Hendox Pub, where we are pretty much every Monday night. Welcome to it. Want to start off the show by saying happy birthday to Julia Esch, who is getting drunk in the other room, because it's her birthday. Friend of the program. Bought her Chipotle for lunch today. She enjoyed it. That's all I'm saying about that. Joined by Greg Benson, Justin Bell, Chris LaMacchia, Sam Fahmy hitting the buttons. Nate Beckman will be on in a little bit. A lot of stuff to talk about, both things. We'll talk to you about things that we need to talk about. First things, though, first, the crew defeat the Dynamo by a score of 3-0 on Saturday night. Show of hands, and I don't care that we're on the radio, how many people saw that coming? Yeah. Nobody.
That makes for riveting radio. Yeah.
I don't
slash
care.
Podcast, do you have a sound effect whatever. Of crickets?
Per yes.
Maybe Galifo.
Tony Galifo saw that coming?
Yeah. Did he pick like 4-0?
Tony picked 4-0. I believe on last week's show I picked 2-0. So between the two of us, we were right, which is something that I will never say ever again.
Yeah, that's fair.
I believe this is what you're going for.
That's the one.
That is exactly what we were going for. Thank you.
Wait for it.
Appreciate that.
There were crickets while Sam was looking for crickets.
There were crickets while Sam was looking for crickets. How meta of us. let's go through this and let's talk about it for just a second. Mr. LaMacchia, we'll start with you. Your thoughts. First of all, I want to point this out as well. Goals in this match by Justin Miram, Adam Bedell, and Aaron Schoenfeld. Adam Bedell, by the way, right before he gets subbed off, which when I was watching. And no, I mean that's cool. It was one of those things. It was a good header into the goal. So much props to him. Great service by Miram. Miram with a goal and an assist in the game. And then you have Schoenfeld sub on for him and 5 minutes later score. So you really can't ask for a much better sub situation there. The guy subbing off scores right before he gets subbed off, and then the guy who comes on scores 5 minutes later.
Are they the new Bash Brothers?
Are they going to be?
Well, I think that depends on who does the next two sticks. But okay. Yeah, I mean, they could very well be the
new Bash Brothers. We might have to call Blake Compton about that.
Sam agrees.
Sam is just full of technical difficulties tonight. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Premature bump affects 1 in 4 podcast producers.
Right. So there were no crickets that time.
The other interesting thing that I do want to point out with this, we had a plethora of shots in the previous match. In this one, 3 shots on target, and they all went in.
They all counted.
So... Say what you want to say about Tally Hall, but that's not a great evening for him. Chris, your thoughts?
Balls.
Yes.
No, my thought is balls. The team has them now.
Yes. Huevos.
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 I think you mean eggs. Those are eggs, right?
Huevos, marbles.
Eggs. Marbles, right.
You have no cajones. Marbles.
Cajones, balls, yes. Gumption, stick-to-itiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Killer.
Chutzpah.
Killer instinct. Yeah, this is another. It happened first in the LA game where whoa, look at that. My microphone works. I can back away from it a little bit. Where they came out and just put their foot on the floor, if you will, and 0-90 in a short period of time and scored 4 goals and won the game going away. And we were all concerned as to whether or not that would be a one-off or a fluke or whatever. And I think this game proves that no. This team is finding its stride and has finally hit puberty and grown some balls.
Justin, your thoughts?
I think it was a good solid win. They've been playing good soccer, and you know, the substitutions are working. It's funny to me that this game was in the 17th minute of the game or 18th minute of the game. Will Trapp had a terrible pass that was just straight up given to the dancing bear, and the dancing bear had two left feet. Actually, you know, Steve Clark saved the game.
Oh,
in,
God,
in that
did.
Minute. He saved the game, because if the Crew fall down, go down 1-0 that early, who knows what happens?
Steve,
we're suddenly in a situation like maybe we were against Toronto FC. Look, I think Houston is a very bad soccer team, mm-hmm. which is kind of surprising, because Dom Kinnear is one of their best coaches, is one yeah. of the best coaches in the league perennially, and they're struggling. They mm-hmm. just look like David Horst was their center, was the center back. And he had played a part in all three of our goals.
Yeah.
Now, look, I mean, I'm not saying that the fact that they weren't very impressive means that the win, the 3-0 win, wasn't very impressive for us. No, it was very impressive.
Yeah.
We did a very good job. Justin Miram scored with his left foot this time. It was a terrific goal. I mean, we have people who say, you know, Justin Miram has one move.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he doesn't. He has more than one move. And he showed that. On Saturday night, but you know, he was the man of the match, I think, in this game. But David Horst was awful, and he's your starting center back.
Yeah.
And the Crew took advantage of that. Good for them.
Yeah,
because that shows that they, like what Chris is saying, they kind of have some balls, they have some guts, and they went after
guts.
Yeah,
that's
they
the other
have
one.
Some guts. Yeah. they went after.
You didn't default to that one.
Yeah, yeah, they went after their weak spot, and they capitalized. You needed that. That was a 6-point game, and I think Houston's probably done for the year. It's something that last season, the season before that, the season before that, the Crew were very bad at, which was putting teams away. And they did that last Saturday. That was excellent.
What do you think, Greg?
There's a few things that I took away from this. One being, Justin, like you said, I think the Dynamo are done for the year, and that's surprising, because we normally think of Houston Dynamo as a team that goes on late season runs in order to even get in the playoffs. Down the stretch, they're one of the most dangerous teams in the league, and we looked at this game maybe as a trap game, potentially. And I took a couple things away from this. First of all, I can't compare it to the Galaxy game, because I mean, it's natural, too. We won both games by 3 goals. It was part of the homestand. But LA is a much better team than Houston.
Mm-hmm.
We should have beaten Houston 3-0, I felt. I mean, just with the way that the Crew played, you know, to turn around from that Galaxy game and parlay it into another repeat performance like that. Go on.
No, go ahead.
No, my standouts from the game were the outside backs.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it starts with the whole defensive line. You know, obviously, we'll talk about Gonzalez coming up.
Yeah.
But when we saw Tyson Wall's name on the team yeah. sheet, a lot of us had hearts in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a couple of fantastic plays to the point that we were actually chanting his name from the Nord Echo, which is something that I never thought that I would hear.
That was a
but
first.
On the outside, on the outside backs, Francis and Gehrig were both fantastic. Francis' service into the middle on a couple of them was fantastic. I think it was his assist that gave Schoenfeld the goal.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It was Francis.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. Yes.
Yeah, I was watching the game.
You were watching the game. I was watching the game, but then I had to watch the replays. So
we've all been there.
Draw your own conclusions.
Yeah.
So I want to pose this question to the table as well, because I think this is interesting. This is the Crew have been on a rather good run of form. I mean, they've been outscoring opponents in the last 3 matches 9-3, which if you would have told me that was going to happen in the middle of May, I would have probably laughed at you and then thrown a pint glass at you.
Even a month ago,
yeah, exactly. But nobody's gone into the book for the last 3 matches for the Crew. The Crew have been winning, and they've been winning, or winning, or at least competing. You know, the Toronto match, they scored 2 goals in the Toronto match. Granted, would we have liked to see them win that match? Of course, but they still put more goals on the board than they have in a lot of the matches this year. They've been playing incredibly clean and winning. Do you guys think, what do you guys think about that? Do you think that might have something to do with it as well?
Yes. I think that the for years now, I think we've all been kind of complaining, or not complaining, but pointing out the fact that Federico Higuain doesn't have players to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys have kind of become, before our eyes, they've become professional soccer players.
Our little boys are all grown up.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. Ethan Finley, Justin Merrim, Eric Gehrig, you can go down the list. And they're growing up, and they're totally taking cues from people, from Pipa.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, you know, and here's another thing that, kind of, I think, backs up what I'm saying is the last two games, the Crew have won 4-1 and 3-0. And probably the last, one of the last players that we think of is Federico Higuain.
Yeah.
As contributors in those wins. What does that say? I mean, the fact that he's playing fantastic soccer.
He is.
Yet he's not the face of these wins.
The team's not having to lean on him.
Right. Well, to me, that shows that these guys are getting better, and they're now playing off of him.
That is huge. It's huge. It still allows him to orchestrate, but it doesn't allow the other team to key in on him.
That's very... And I'm going to get slapped for this, but it's been one of those days, so I don't care. Yell at me on the internet, because that's what you should do. It's very Guillermo-esque of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
In 2000...
Wouldn't it be Guillermo-esque?
Guillermo-esque, right. I forget whether it was 08 or 09, but one of the years he had half as many goals as assists.
Yeah.
And that's because he...
I think it was 09.
Was it 09?
I want to say...
He had
like
17 assists and 8 goals. Yeah. And it's because he made the players around him better because they were finally able to play with him. They had some experience with him, and they knew they were able to read what he was going to do, and he was able to make those around him better rather than just having to go and do everything on his own. And mm-hmm. I think we're seeing that out of Pipa at this point.
Well, you go back a few weeks and you look at his goal in the Chicago game. I mean, right. The fact that the rest of the team has lifted means that opponents are having to look at somebody else.
Right.
All of a sudden, Pipa has space, and he's scoring 9 seconds into a half.
Yeah, and you know, the fact that Justin Merrim is on, what, is it 3 goals in 3 games with 2 assists in each of those games? You know, people are going to have to start looking at Justin Merrim now that Adam Bedell is growing out of his baby giraffe stage. Sorry, Adam Bedell's dad. He's going to have to get a little bit of attention from opposing defenses as well.
And Ethan Finley as well.
Ethan mm-hmm. Finley, Aaron Schoenfeld, the guys that normally were written off.
Tony, by God, Chani.
Tony, mother trucking Chani.
Seriously.
Finally figured out, after how many years under Robert and Greg, has finally figured out how to play the game of soccer.
Sam. I think Tony was damaged by Robert and his staff. I think whatever Berhalter and Josh Wolf and those guys figured out is working some serious, serious magic in Tony Chani. My biggest pet peeve about Warzyha was not his tactics on the field. It's the fact that he did not know how to handle these professionals as people. He did not know how to give and take.
But look at what Bobby's doing in the Polish Premiera, whatever.
Different, completely different.
Sometimes all you need is a change of scenery.
You know, yeah, sometimes you do.
We've heard that.
And I'm not defending Robert at all.
No,
don't get me wrong.
You can.
Maybe he's learned. Maybe
there's
he's
nothing
learned.
Wrong with that. I have no. Yeah. I'm glad Robert's not coaching our team anymore. But I have not. But I have
but
nothing.
I would have been
well,
glad
I have nothing
well
but
where
well
he's
wishes
at.
For him. Yeah,
yeah.
I have not.
Exactly.
I didn't want him to be the Crew coach anymore, but I want him to be successful.
As much as I want to get yelled at on the internet, I don't want to have death threats. So I just wanted to make it clear that I was not defending Robert.
Yeah.
Don't
worry, Steve Abreu promised
that necessarily reflect those of the Massive Reporter.
Yeah, Steve Abreu has promised to stay off the internet this week. It's fine.
It's not.
Twitter has been very quietly.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. Nate Beckman's going to come up on the second segment in just a few minutes here. Talk to us about the playoffs, Chris.
Playoffs.
So that's coming up, and a lot more. This is the Massive Report live from Hendox.
Bye. It's time to prepare you and you for the future.
This is a forecast.
The forecast for the weekend.
When you look at things in a whole, you know, the season is peaks and valleys.
Folks, I think it's time we look into the future.
And we're back. It is the Massive Report as I'm being tickled and getting another beverage here. Thank you, Ira. We're back, and this is the Massive Report, and we're going straight into Mr. Nate Beckman and his playoff forecaster.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. How are you today?
Sam's waving at me. I'm fantastic.
I forgot to tell this, but this is going to be every week from now until God knows what happens.
Yeah.
So you're showing up?
I'll either be here or I will be here in spirit, aka the interwebs.
Just bring Camilla. Willie's got a whole baby corral out back.
We can do that.
He set up a daycare center in the walk-in. It's fine.
We'll bring in the pen. The pen is the best thing about daycare. We bought this so late in. I think she was 9 months old when we finally realized we could just, you know, put a big plastic gate around the middle of our living room and like let her run.
So she's like a dog.
not really. They don't eat the same thing.
That's true.
I have to say that Hendox having a toddler pen would be just like the greatest
thing. I agree.
There's like 20 toddlers. Just kind of like.
I think we should ask the women in the audience real quick. Ladies, do you think that Willie should open a daycare center in the back?
Oh, hell yeah.
See, all the ladies agree. And they don't even have children.
They rename the place Bottles.
Yes, I agree.
That's what you think.
Wow. Apparently Julia has children. And this is breaking news on the Massive Reports. Julia has children. Nate, go ahead.
All right. Talk. So anyway.
Bail me out of this.
The last couple of years, I've done this forecaster thing every second half of the season where I say, all right, where are the crew stand in position in the playoffs? And what I'm going to do is go into where they are week by week, tell you which teams to root for, and then kind of give you a best case, worst case scenario for the following week. So this last weekend, you know, they won. Hey, great. But the teams that they're stuck with in the middle of the playoff race also all won home games.
Ooh.
So there's four teams that are really kind of vying for two spots right now, the fourth and fifth spots. So there's Columbus, it's New York, Philly, and New England.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like I said, they all won this weekend. Above us, there's Toronto. Toronto had a great start to the season. They won six of their first 11. But after that, they've only won three of their last 12. They lost their goalkeeper, Julius Cesar, who was in on loan. It remains to be seen if they're going to really, you know, be playing at that same level. I've got D.C. and Kansas City as in. I've got Montreal as out. And then this last weekend, while there really wasn't much separation in the middle, all those teams moved away from Chicago and Houston. And I think next week the same thing's going to happen, and those two teams are pretty much toast. So you've got four to five teams shooting for two to three spots, really. Toronto still has these games in hand, so you have to kind of do some funky math looking at the look at this points per game statistic that I hate. But, you know, they're going to have two games against Philadelphia in like 4 days in the coming week. So they play next week. Then after that, they've got a midweek. You know, like on a Wednesday they play Philly and they play them again on Saturday. That'll help to kind of resolve where Toronto is going to shake. I really think they're going to end up kind of in the scrum. I don't think they're going to push.
Philly got some weird scheduling this year. Because that's two that I'm aware of right now without even looking at it home at homes that Philly has.
Yeah, there's a lot of this condensed scheduling. It's like, you know, the non-marquee teams get kind of the butt end of the stick. At the end of the year, they're like, who do the crew have to play now? Houston. All right, let's give them two games. And it's like 2 and 3 weeks. The same thing with New England. The same thing with Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that it's happened all through the East. You know, all these teams play each other a lot.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that's going to push the playoff line. It's been at like 40, 41 points for the fifth place spot as far as where it's been projecting out a lot of the season. This last week, it went from 40 up to 44 points for fifth place.
Wow.
And I think that's going to continue to happen. It's going to rise. It's going to move back closer towards the norm, which is actually between like 45 and 50 points as these teams play each other and they start to not get beat by teams in the West, which they were doing most of the season so far. So If you go down, if you go in the article, I've got your kind of the in and out section as far as who I think's in the playoffs, who's an out. I mentioned 44 points in fifth place, 45 points for fourth place, and 49 for third right now is kind of where it's looking at. Fourth place is kind of the sweet spot in some ways, because if you get fourth, you immediately host a home playoff match, like that Wednesday after the end of the season. You host the wild card. Granted, it's a knockout round game, yeah, but it's exciting. You host a game. If you win it, you move on. And yeah, when you move on, you host another game on that Saturday or Sunday against the number one team in your conference. And as the last couple of years have shown, there's really no benefit to having the number one or number two seed.
Yeah.
You know, if you avoid the knockout round, you could say that's one thing. But, you know, I think the Crew can actually shoot for third.
Yeah.
So for the next at least few weeks, I think that should still be something that's in their sights. But that's out there. As far as who to root for next week, Toronto and New England play each other. It's tough because these teams, when they play each other, they're teams that are in that scrum, it's usually a tie is the best result for the Crew.
Yeah.
Because if you consider like one of those home and away series against Toronto and Philly, let's say, if they both won one of those games, they'd end up with 3 points each on the after they're done. If they both tied both games, they both only end up with two.
Yeah.
Because more points are distributed when one of the teams wins.
Yeah.
Than if two teams tie. So you want Toronto and New England to win or to tie each other, and you want actually D.C. to beat New York. D.C.'s in. New York's one of the people we're up against. You want New York to lose. I know. Sorry, Sam. You have to root for D.C. this week. I know you looked like you were going to throw up. But
that was just the Chinese food he had earlier.
Understandable. I hate D.C. more than any other team.
That's why he's drinking ginger ale.
We've got Philly's off this week, so if they get any points, they'll move a little bit far out ahead of Philly. And then as far as best case, worst case, best case, they can end up with third on points, fourth on points per game, and worst case, they would be tied for fourth through sixth place on points and sixth on points per game if all the scenarios. I have this on the article, so you want to check out all the nitty-gritty details, you can check them out there.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just going to say that Nate actually makes one of the best points I've ever seen made in a written article regarding Major League Soccer. And that is that Chicago has won twice in Bridgeview this year and never once in Chicago.
Cool.
And yeah, that's exactly, I completely, yes, it's a great point, Nate.
It's really too
Chicago
bad.
Chicago has never once this year won in Chicago.
Chicago hasn't won in Chicago in years.
Yeah, when was the last time they played in Soldier Field?
2005?
Yeah, so
2006, something along those lines?
They're like 0 for the decade in Chicago.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Not even the Open Cup games, huh?
I know.
That's too bad.
I know. They should have a game at Wrigley.
Like Loyola or something. They should have a game at
Wrigley. They should really have a game at Wrigley. That would be kind of fun. Or even Comiskey or whatever it's called now.
Grant Park in a big open field because it's actually in Chicago.
And the Red Hot Chili Peppers could play halfway through.
If they played at Grant Park, they wouldn't have to worry about attendance because they only draw, 15, 20 fans? So, yeah, there's plenty of space to do that.
Yeah. I mean, just the vagrants alone would.
Yeah.
You get 50. I think this coming weekend is going to be a good one for the Crew. I think that a lot of the results are going to go their way this weekend, where this last weekend it was just about taking care of business.
Yeah.
Nate, you did, and please forgive me here, my reading skills are on a third grade level. Did you mention the things that would occur if if the Columbus Crew were to, I don't know, not win this weekend?
Yeah, that would be the worst case scenario where we lose to Montreal. It's towards the bottom.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah. Worst case, Montreal beats the Crew, Kansas City beats Houston, Revs beat Toronto, and New York beats D.C., then there's a three-way tie for fourth place on points. We go to sixth, and wow.
If all the worst things happen, we would drop down to sixth on points per game.
I think the one nice thing that we can take away is just the schedule that we have going forward. I think that's huge. I want to say the conversation before this was that, and I'm going to go ahead and pull up my handy dandy whatever thingy because my phone just decided to shut off.
Interocitor?
My interocitor, yes. But everybody we play Because it was New York was the only team that was ahead of us on points.
They're the only ones in playoff position.
They're only one in playoff position. Yeah. New York is now below us on points, also below us on total wins, and that's the rest of our schedule.
Yep.
Which I don't think you can say about a lot of the other teams right now. Obviously, D.C., you know, everybody they play for the remainder of the season is below them in points, but... You know, we only play one team one time that's in playoff position currently.
Well, but it's pretty close. I mean, we do play, of those four teams, we play Philadelphia twice.
Yes.
Right? Twice in the last 3 weeks of the season. We play New England twice, who now has Jermaine Jones.
Yes.
And we actually play, I was hoping we'd play them pretty soon so that maybe he wouldn't get into shape. We play them in 4 weeks and in 6 weeks.
But at the same time, we don't have, you know, we're not playing Seattle, Dallas, DC, and Kansas City. You know, and that would be a much much more difficult road to hoe, at least in my opinion.
It would. And we beat Seattle and we beat DC. I mean, I was looking for a second. We've beaten some of the best teams in the league this year.
We have. They weren't necessarily...
Oh, yeah, we beat Seattle.
Yeah, we did beat Seattle.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, no, you didn't.
I think about that all of the time. That's always on my mind.
I thought I saw that giant Miram poster in your wall in your bedroom, what you see when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah. Why are you in Justin's bedroom?
There's that.
Ain't no need to ask about that, my friends.
There's the
I'm
giant
so sorry,
Miram
Victoria.
Poster, and then there's the giant picture of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we beat them.
It's a giant picture of Robbie Branham crying,
is it
yelling into his capo microphone.
Were they burning?
Yeah. Portland Depot?
I haven't seen that game.
No.
I did not watch that game.
It's right in the beginning.
Is it?
Yeah, Seattle's burning.
Is it great?
I don't think it was great in years. They did
it's probably
Yellow Brick Road. First of all, I know I've seen that somewhere before.
Yeah,
plus of all, it's not Kansas City. It's not Kansas.
Wait, so...
They did Dorothy, which was weird.
Well, no. It's not weird. It's the Emerald City.
Yes.
Seattle is the Emerald City.
Yes, and Justin made that meme in 2009.
Well, yeah, but...
Yeah, I did.
Portland, Portland hasn't done it yet, therefore that wasn't official.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Portland has great beer.
But we did beat Seattle.
Portland also has good donuts.
Did you guys know that Seattle has a statue underneath a bridge that's just a giant troll with a Volkswagen Beetle in one of its hands? Seriously, I learned that the other
pleasuring
day.
Pleasuring itself.
I'm gonna need some photos.
Pleasuring itself.
No, because would make sense.
There's a whole. I'll show you the video of it during the break here.
No, can I ask? I'm gonna ask you a question.
Do it.
I mean,
you're more than welcome.
When when you talk about the forecaster and everything like that, I mean, by the way, it's awesome that you do this because this is very important. I think because again, I did not think that the playoffs were in reach. But if you were sitting here right now, if you were doing this, which you are right now, sitting here.
Right here in Columbus, Ohio!
Tell me right now.
It's my wrestling pop.
Do you think, yes or no, that the Crew will make the playoffs this year?
Yes.
Do you think that we'll get a home game in the playoffs this year?
Not sure. That one is tricky because I see it. Right now we're slotted for, and actually... I think New York has a pretty decent chance to jump us. I'm scared of Thierry Henry and his retirement, like tearing up the league. I think Toronto has a pretty decent chance of slipping, but I'm also pretty concerned with Philly. So I actually see New York up in third and then the Crew in Philly jostling for fourth and fifth spots. So if we end up in fifth, we go to Philly for a one-game playoff. We win that, we earn our home game.
Right.
You know, if we end up in fourth, then otherwise. But, you know, it remains to be seen how good New England is after getting Jermaine Jones. Does he come in and kind of not make that much of a difference because it's going to require them to change who they are a little bit or not? I mean, you never know.
If we're in fourth place, then the wild card game is played at Crew Stadium.
That's right. Midweek, like immediately after the season's over.
Right.
Unless they completely change their playoff format, which
could happen.
This is MLS.
Yeah, we've seen that happen with MLS.
Depends on the envelope.
Yeah, it depends on what envelope's drawn.
Having heard that from you right now, I feel confident that we will make the playoffs.
Well, I'm excited about it. I think if nothing else, this is going to be...
Nate and I are like over here just kind of like googly-eyed. And
yeah, it's fine. Chris is on Reddit yelling at somebody.
This is going to be one of the most exciting chases, honestly. Like, the The East is ridiculous. It's so packed. There's some good teams. Philadelphia got better. Philadelphia got Carlos Valdez, and they got the keeper from Algeria, who is only going to get better. I think, you know, their first game last night, Wenger came out and had two goals finally. And you know, I think New York is completely,
you know what else
completely
is packed?
Capable of going in the playoffs. What's that?
You know what else is packed? The fifth place race in the West.
Oh, that's insane. The West, yeah, that's just insane.
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah. It, so it's going to either be, just to put this out there, Vancouver, Portland, or Colorado. So you know what, where Don Garber has the voodoo doll pointed at right now. He's just sitting there every single day in his office. Please not Colorado. Please not Colorado. Please not Colorado. That's all he's doing the entire time. He really wants Portland to slip in that fifth place spot, win the wild card, and then he gets a home and home series with Seattle and Portland. Yeah. So I'm just pointing that out there. So we're going to go to break. We're going to come back, and Greg Benson's going to say a bunch of stuff in Australian that you won't understand. This is the Massive Report.
Before long, they were cloning DNA. Now I'm being chased by some irate velociraptors. Well, believe me, this has been one lousy day.
Almost bumped to segment four after a blind draw prior to taping. It's time for Cards Against Insanity, the segment where I take those in the sports world engaging in the art of foolish behavior down a peg or two, so let's flash paper. Before I do, a quick follow-up from last week's episode. I called out Team Penske, the NASCAR team, for making an unfortunate typo on Twitter where they said sexy instead of second. In addition to mentioning on the show, I also called them out for it on Twitter before the Massive Report went to air and right before the offending tweet was deleted. Penske's response? I've been blocked from following their Twitter account. Way to take your mistakes like men. That's worthy of a card in itself, but the following people deserve it more. Yellow card to AS Monaco, the French club from the kingdom of high rollers, supermodels, and Formula One, where there's a Maybach in every garage. Yeah, their bus broke down. At some point on the 10-hour journey to yesterday's away game at Nantes, the merde, as it were, hit the fan, and the team had to make the rest of the trip in a fleet of taxis, because apparently Uber wouldn't go that far. Look, Monaco just sold James Rodriguez for $100 million after the media spectacle that Bayern Munich made out of unveiling their new team bus. I'm sure they're willing to sell off the old one really cheap. Yellow card to Karim Bellarabi. The Bayer Leverkusen winger scored the fastest goal in Bundesliga history on Saturday as he hit the back of the net 9 seconds into Bayer's 2-0 win at Borussia Dortmund. He gets a yellow card not for any excessive celebration or post-game soundbite, but because the away team scoring a goal 9 seconds into a half in a game between a team in red and a team in yellow and black? Where have I heard that before? Yeah, Pipa totally did it a couple of weeks ago in the Columbus-Chicago game. I swear, if it's not Portland fans ripping off an Higuain thing, it's the Germans. Find a new act. Yellow cards to Nolan Arenado and Stu Cole, third baseman and third base coach respectively for the Colorado Rockies, who apparently took a team activity a little too literally. The Rockies organized a jersey day before their flight to San Francisco for a series against the Giants, getting the players and the coaches to all wear their favorite sports jerseys and pose for a team photo next to the plane. Now, most of them picked football jerseys. A couple of guys wore hockey jerseys. There was one guy in a Team USA soccer jersey. But in the middle stand, Arenado and Cole wearing Colorado Rockies jerseys, as in the same ones they wore for the game that night. Either they didn't really grasp the spirit of the thing, or they're just cheap. I mean, totally understandable. Arenado's making $500,000 this year. Who can afford $100 on that kind of money? You know, for a jersey. Those things are expensive. Come on. Twitter fail of the week and the accompanying yellow card to Manchester United, whose social media/PR department has apparently just given up. In the closing minutes of yesterday's 1-1 draw at Sunderland, United's official Twitter account posted, quote, "Time is running out at the Stadium of Light, and in truth, Sunderland look the more likely winners at the moment," end quote. Manchester United's Twitter account is now apparently run by disgruntled fans. Congratulations, United. Now you know what it feels like to support virtually every other club in the world. By the way, United still haven't won this season, and Aston Villa haven't conceded a goal. Just throwing that out there. And because it's fun to kick an old enemy while they're down, second yellow card to Manchester United, after their club store told fans that there would be a delay before they could get a jersey with new signing Angel Di Maria's name on the back. Why the delay? They've run out of the letter R. The club shop has run out of the letter R. Apparently there was a bulk order from some pirates recently. But bear in mind, it's not as if it's a name like Carragher where the letter repeats. There's only one R in Di Maria. How many people wanted this jersey? I mean, there are two R's in red card, though, so here you go. And finally, red card, speaking of which, to Major League Soccer. Surprise, surprise. If you've been living under a rock for the last 48 hours, Jermaine Jones has been acquired by the New England Revolution after what can only be described as a mid-season draft allocation, blind envelope lottery, we're just making stuff up at this point, sweepstakes. And that's only a slight exaggeration. As we know, the Columbus Crew are currently at the top of the allocation order for non-designated players after the Houston Dynamo traded up to get the only spot that had been ahead of them in order to get DeMarcus Beasley. Now, whether or not the Crew offered Jermaine Jones a contract is inconsequential. Whether or not that he would have fit into Greg Berhalter's scheme, also a separate issue. He was allowed to bypass the allocation order thanks to being, and this is a direct quote from MLS, a designated player of a certain threshold. And the Crew aren't even got the ones who got the worst of this whole mess. That would be the Chicago Fire, who had expressed interest in Jones, and from what we're reading, it was only the bottom line that was keeping the deal from being done. As soon as the Revs said they were interested, MLS felt the need to step in, and in doing so, created one of the shadiest-looking backroom football fiascos this side of the Atlantic. Just for a second, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I like having a league with some parity in it. I like being consistently surprised by results like DC winning away at Kansas City on Saturday, the Crew beating LA 4-1 last week. I like not having the same three or four teams at the top of the standings every year while everyone else fights for the scraps. I'm sure that MLS understands that the best way that they continue to grow a fan base across North America is to have all the teams in all the markets competitive on some level. But the way they've gone about it, by asserting this despotism over all of their franchisees with no transparency whatsoever to the media or fans, is a joke. Seriously, I understand the plot of most Doctor Who episodes better than I understand what's going on at the MLS Brains Trust, and that's a term I use loosely because I question their brains and I certainly don't trust them. By saying that Jones was above a certain salary level, caliber, whatever, and not subject to the regular allocation order, MLS is acknowledging the existence of a separate allocation category for designated players, something they had not admitted to, even after Berhalter claimed it to be so earlier in the year. But MLS, for some reason, feels the need to intervene in every single transaction that takes place with their member clubs. No players go anywhere unless they approve it. No money changes hands without them taking a cut. It's like trying to play soccer with the Falcone family. This is the tribute that you have to pay in exchange for their protection. Commissioner Don Garber's Twitter handle, The Soccer Don, couldn't be more appropriate. What should have happened is that if indeed Jermaine Jones would be paid high enough to warrant a status as a designated player, and we all know he will, then all teams with an available DP slot should be able to make their bids for him. Whoever those teams can come up with the money and successfully negotiate the contract, congratulations, you get a player. It's really that simple. It puts the power back into the hands of the team owners, whose financial investment allows MLS to stay in business and expand new markets. We don't always like all of our team owners, but I'd trust Anthony Precourt, Merritt Paulson, Philip Anschutz, or even Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, for crying out loud, to make a decision related to team ownership long before I trusted a bunch of suits at MLS playing whose league is it anyway, where the rules are made up and the points don't matter. MLS's intervention with secret raffles and rules that they need to invent as they go along makes this look like professional wrestling. It's athletic, and it's sometimes entertaining, but it's utterly scripted, and nothing that anyone should put any emotion into the results of, because everything has been predetermined before the competitors even entered the arena, and that is not a league that I want to be supporting. My name is Greg Benson. You can find me on Twitter as Gregulator614, Facebook as That One Guy Greg, and if you're at Hendox Pub, you're in my seat. Play on, but remember, I'm watching you.
So kind of playing off of what Greg was talking about there, I do want to go into this for just a second. Alexi Lawless, yesterday at 6:30 p.m., tweets out, and I want to throw this to the rest of the panel, and then Greg, if you want to chime in, you can as well, referring to the Jermaine Jones deal. This is his tweet, at, Scary Ginge with No Soul, at Alexi Lawless, sorry.
That's actually his official Twitter name.
I was scared for a second there. Okay, let's do this. How specifically do MLS's intentionally vague, confusing, and ever-changing rules, which he's admitting to by saying this, actually hurt the league as a business? And I want to go right into Justin Bell, because it will make for the most entertaining radio. Go ahead, Justin.
Look, I've been saying this for like probably years now. And last off season, I recall, after the news broke that Bradley was signed by Toronto and that the Crew had offered this $15 million contract for him, and everyone was saying how this is justification for, you know, that actually, you know what, these are clubs. These are clubs that have individual, I don't know,
ownership groups,
autonomy.
Yeah, autonomy. Like they have a will to succeed on themselves, you know, for themselves. You know, and I was saying, it's like there's no way that MLS would allow a player like Michael Bradley to come to Columbus. No way. And I was called by, and I'll name it, by a MLS analyst at twitter.com, who I usually respect these guys. I think they're smart about soccer. I was called a tinfoil hat person for saying this. The when you talk about the fact that this league is contrived, where they place players in where they feel that they will be best, they will serve them the league best, not the teams.
Yeah, the league.
That you're called. You're immediately called a conspiracy theorist. You're thrown into question. They actually threaten you with banning you from going to games, from supporting your local team the way that you feel is best. They will threaten you with these things. You know, the fact that this happens all of the time, and yet this stuff happens, this stuff comes up where it is so plainly obvious. Yep. That this entire league is contrived on where they put players, on who they want to win certain titles, certain awards, and yet we're for just tweeting out the truth, just tweeting out observational, you know, things that we see as fact. It's really hard to support this league. It makes it very, very difficult. And I know that we have a chance here on the Master Report to talk to our owner and our new president. And look, I am respectful to these people because I know that what they're doing is they're trying to make a living. They're trying to be successful in a business, in a milieu that is just bizarre to a lot of us as soccer fans. You know, look, please come on here and talk to us about this stuff. You know, I listened to the Extra Time podcast today. I made a point to listen to it. You know, Simon Borg, who I like Simon. I think he says some things that are really smart. MLS made, you could almost hear it in his voice that he doesn't think this is right, what happened.
Yeah.
He came out and tried to explain what happened. And what they said was that, yes, there are rules. The rules exist. And in the rule book, and they talked about this, it's at the discretion of the league when you come into a circumstance that has no precedence or there's no rule. And basically what happens is when there's no rule for what's coming down the pike. I'm sorry, Sam, I can't read that. I'll read that.
But it's very relevant to what you're saying.
There's no rule for it, then basically MLS can make up a rule. The rule is that MLS can make up rules.
Yeah.
And that somehow justifies this. Look, it doesn't justify this. And the fact that people point this out doesn't make them anti-MLS. What it makes them is saying, look, please be honest with us. Please be open with us. We're soccer fans. We're not MLS fans. And this is the main problem that I have with MLS. And if you go back 2 weeks and listen to the podcast about how I say that this league sucks, this is what I'm talking about. We don't want to be MLS fans.
Yeah.
We want to be soccer fans.
Because this is what we followed for years around the world. And when Don Garber comes out last year and says, you know what, there's too much soccer on television. And then he tries to cover that up, like, to, you know, when people point out to the fact that that's kind of messed up the way that he put that.
Yeah.
You know, he tries to explain it away, saying, well, no, you know what I mean is, like, you know, there's a lot of competition. No. We know what you meant.
Yeah.
We know that you meant that there's a lot of soccer on television where people can see how these things happen around the world. Mm. And we can compare them to the way things happen in MLS. And we don't like them.
I'm completely aware, just because as a periphery, I follow the Orlando Pirates, okay? It's not my club.
But they don't want us to be soccer fans of MLS.
But this is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I follow the Orlando friggin' Pirates in South
you.
Africa.
They don't want you, Matt.
Yeah. And what I'm saying
is
that
I am
more versed on the way that players are allocated in the South African League.
Yeah.
Than I am in the league in my own home country. And that
stinks.
That is confusing on so many levels.
And listen, I really, you know, I challenge anyone to find a more avid long-term supporter than me. And I never do this, but seriously, of the Columbus Crew. I have followed this team since it started.
Yeah.
I want to support this team, and I do it. I do it in a way that I don't, you know... Like, I don't want to get into this, but I do it like honestly and thoroughly and thoughtfully.
Yeah, there's not a single person here that would question that. Yeah.
My goodness, this league just makes it so, so very hard. And look, Anthony Precourt, I love you. God bless you for what you're trying to do. Greg Berhalter, I love you. God bless you for what you're trying to do. But the league is messing you up. Mm. They are not your friends. If you want to do it, the best thing that you could do right now is fight against them. And right now we're in a situation where the CBA is coming down the pike, and this is going to be a telling point for the league.
It's going to be a very telling point.
Honestly, seriously, go out and support the Players Union. I mean this. If the Players Union is trying to get this league to change so that there's more autonomy by the ownership, but the individual owners of the individual clubs, do that. Because I think that's what needs to happen. It really needs to happen.
Can the players and the owners be on the same side against the league? I mean, I don't know how the CBA is going to work.
It's so weird, but I honestly think that the majority of owners would probably agree with you. I want to pose this question.
Sorry, that was a lot of.
No, yeah. it was good. It was a good point.
Kind of what we went to you, Justin.
I want to pose this question to everybody.
I'm probably going to be banned by MLS for saying that. I would imagine.
Probably,
I would
it's
not
fine.
Imagine.
We'll get you a fake mustache and some goggles.
You're
It'll
already
be
the worst in the world. How much lower can you go?
Yeah. So I want to bring this just as a thought that just kind of came into my head, and then I want to kind of riff on it for a second. Two things. First of all, if Posh Spice would have wanted to ski a lot, would the league have blocked David Beckham from going to Colorado? I think yes.
Yes.
I think because the only reason that Beckham went to L.A. and not New York or whatever is because his wife wanted to live in L.A. That's what we've heard from everybody, and L.A. was obviously willing to put up the money.
L.A. was also a very attractive market for MLS to have a player of David Beckham's stature. Like,
I agree. I'm not going on a league side. I'm going on the line that we got.
Yeah,
right.
But based on what we know now, I mean, having had a couple of years' experience now to look back and see what MLS has done since then.
Yeah.
You know, with the Michael Bradley thing, with the Jermaine Jones thing.
That gets me to my follow-up question, though.
There you go.
Follow-up question: Jermaine Jones, if Chicago had a downtown stadium and was drawing better, would there have been a draw?
This is the question about this. This is getting down to the specific case. When you hear the explanation for why this happened the way that it happened, they said, okay, there were two teams that were willing to pay a certain amount of money.
Yes.
For Jermaine Jones. And the only way that they could figure this out was to put two different teams in two blank envelopes and to have Don Garber pick one of them. Okay, now just wait. Let that sink
score
in.
Score is Q to 12.
Okay, so there's that. Now, listen. What that says is that both Chicago and New England, if these are in fact clubs and not franchises, both of those randomly happen to pick the same exact number and offer that to Jermaine Jones.
Q
can't they arm wrestle? I mean, how can these clubs not work with the agents penalty kicks and figure it out?
Look, well, yeah, and that's what happens.
Two-man sack races on alternating Saturdays until the winner can be determined.
In a real league, what happens is both of the teams put together an offer, and the best offer
wins.
Yeah,
then they bid against each other.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you look
was my point.
Yeah, and so like the commissioner or whoever opens up both envelopes, and the higher one gets Jermaine Jones. But that's not what happened, and this is what gets to my point, is that the league is buying these players. The league paid for Michael Bradley. The league paid for Clinton Dempsey.
That's true.
And that's why Michael Bradley is playing in Toronto, and that's why and Clinton Dempsey is playing in Seattle. It's because the league wanted them there. There's no, you know... It makes me so frustrated. This is maybe the most frustrating thing to me as a soccer fan in the United States, is that people will defend this bullcrap over and over again and say that if you point that out, that you're being a conspiracy theorist. I was told by someone who I respect, by multiple people who I respect a lot, that I'm more prone to believe in conspiracies than other people. And look, the fact is, this is their business model.
Yeah,
this is the model for MLS. This is not a conspiracy.
It's not a conspiracy.
This is the way that it works, and they want you to go out and support your local team. They want you to support the things the banners that are on the stadium.
Or the Sounders.
Yeah, the Sounders.
One of the two.
The banners that are on Crew Stadium right now say "Our Future, Our Club." This is not a club.
Yeah.
This is not our future. This is the future of the league. This is the future of a franchise. Mm-hmm. If you point that out, You're undermining this massive plan that they have.
How fast does MLS need to get away from single entity?
As fast as they possibly can. Yesterday. And I think that I think that Anthony Precourt wants to do this.
Yeah,
I really do. I think maybe I'm wrong, but I think that as someone who believes in what he can do, and I've said this like repeatedly. The people who work for the Crew are fantastic.
Yeah.
But they're being held down by the league. Imagine what would happen if Anthony Precourt were to come out and say, I want to build a team. I want to build a club in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
And I want all of my people to be the best that they can be. Go out and have no restraints, no league restraints, nothing like that. We would kick ass. Well, we would kick everyone's ass because these people are good enough to do that. But the league won't let them because of this bullcrap parity thing.
Well, the whole thing is you look at the Major League Baseball model. And you look at the Major League Baseball model, and you agree to pay, like, if you want to bring a player over from the Japanese League, which is really, in my opinion, in any of the other sports, hockey has it a bit, but that is what happens the majority of the time, is that your club agrees to pay X amount of money to buy the contract out, which is essentially a transfer. And then at that point, when you get to that point, you negotiate with the player or normally with that player's agent, and whoever offers the most money gets the player.
Yeah.
You know, it's Bud Selig's not sitting there going, well, he can't go to the Brewers, screw them. You know what I mean? That's not happening in other sports, even in other sports in this country. And so it's just confusing. But my whole point that I wanted to touch back on before we go to break here and come back and talk about Montreal, the next segment will be all in French, just so everyone knows. Before we come back and talk about Montreal, that's not happening. Is that if Chicago had a downtown stadium, do you believe that there would have been a blind draw? Does anybody believe that? Sam wants to talk.
I have to clarify something, because I watched what Taylor Twellman and what's his name we're talking about yesterday.
Simon Borg?
No.
Alexi Lalas.
So,
Greg Lawless.
They did the blind. They did the blind draw, but there was a condition that I don't know if I'm guessing Jermaine Jones' agent put that in there. But there was a condition that if he did end up going to New England, that the money was increased from whatever the original money that he would have gotten had he gone to Chicago.
Wow,
really?
Well, it's to pay for the gas to get to Foxborough. That makes sense.
That was a condition that if the blind draw ended up with him going to New England, that there would be
a dowry.
Not a dowry, but as much as
your daughter's not that pretty.
Dude, you know how much cab rides are to Foxborough? I've done it
I
twice.
I bet you do.
Seriously.
A payoff to go to basically what would be a
less sexy market.
Look, is the paper his knee surgery maybe? After a year on the turf there?
Yeah. You know what? Look, if MLS would come out and just say all these things.
Yeah.
Just say them. Put it all out there and say, this is how things are going to work.
Yeah.
Well, I would. It would be so much better.
Yeah.
But they don't. Yeah. They drop these things
if
on
if I knew
on,
where the crew the was in the double minute. Secret allocation order, I'd be okay with it.
Listen, why are there four different allocation orders? Why?
Yeah.
Explain that. I asked yesterday on Twitter, please, someone from MLS, come on the podcast and please explain this. Just give us
and
a reason
why. And
then
dump a bucket of boiling water on their head.
Well, no. I mean, they could either explain it or get lava poured on their head.
The MLS ice
bucket
challenge.
Too. Yeah.
No. Boiling water challenge.
No, boiling
was
water
Was it boiling
challenge.
Water?
Boiling water. It was boiling water, but, not lava.
But look, we want to do this. We want to support our teams. We want to do these things. But you make it so impossible for no reason. Yep. No reason at all.
Well, there's probably some kind of like frat boy competition going on the boards in MLS right now because they know that they with the agreement coming up at the end of the year, they're like, what is the craziest thing we can do in the next 2.5 months and get away with it because it's probably all going away. We got two new owners that are coming in. I mean, do you think the $50-100 billion team in New York is going to stand for that sort of stuff?
No, like, not at all.
No, they
the
get
more
all the
ownerships
now.
They get, and it's not
they
just
get all
the
three owners. Owners.
But that's a really good. That's a really good point, though.
Sam
Nate.
Would know about that.
That's a really good point. You know, you said, you know, do you feel like the owners of Manchester City are going to stand for that? They're not going to stand for that. Yeah. And so what's going to happen is there's going to be another alteration to the rules.
There's
going to
be
that's
going to
make
do
them.
Do you have island buying money?
Yeah, right. It's going to assuage them, just like it assuaged the Seattle guys, just like it assuaged Tim Lewicki and Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. It's going to assuage them, and guess who is going to be left out again?
Yeah.
Like, guess who? When we're this close to signing Mixed Discrude, guess who? MLS is not going to kick in another $500,000 or $1 million. To make
Don
a player
Tavers
like Mixed Discrude come to Columbus, guess what's going to happen?
I said this
is why this is the thin veneer of parody, and it's actually just this bullcrap system that we're stuck with, and we're the ones who get stuck with it. And you know what? I don't like the Chicago fans. I've had nothing but poor relationships with them over the decades. But I kind of feel bad for them right now.
I feel sorry for them, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for them because now they're tasting a little bit of this.
Yeah,
it's
that's totally true.
As much of a parody as like a level playing field that they want, there's still like multiple levels.
I'm gonna say this real quick, and we're going to go to break, and then we'll come back. Did you have one thing
before? Yeah, well, to answer your question, as you were saying before about if Chicago had a downtown stadium, the irony of it is that New England doesn't have a stadium in downtown Boston.
I understand
they're
that.
Not packing it out, and yet he wound up there anyway.
But that was my point, is right. if somebody, if there was, right. if one of the teams would have had a downtown
it was
stadium,
entirely,
Chicago's the team that didn't get him,
it's
that
entirely
was my point.
Possible, and here's the other thing that I want to just end on real quick. Is that reading the news about Jones going to New England yesterday, my first thought, and it's terrible that I have to think this, but my first thought was, wait a second, Columbus has to play New England twice more before
That's
the end of the
right.
regular
Me
season.
Too. That's exactly what I thought.
Does MLS want the crew not to make the playoffs that badly that they will stack the deck? And I caught myself in, as you said, Justin, this tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist kind of, is it really that bad? Are the lizard people real? But it was. It's sad that we even have to think that way. It's sad that we think that might just be a possibility.
Two things real quick before we go to break. A, just because you're paranoid don't mean they're not after you.
Mm-hmm.
But second of all, before we run this whole thing into the ground, I said this on the old podcast, and this was in like 9... 09, it was, is that, I said that I felt bad for the Toronto fans because Don Garber had found a new prom date, and it was Seattle. And next year,
oh, yeah.
Next year, I think I'm going to find I'm going to feel a little bad, not too bad, but I'm going to feel a little bad for the Seattle fans because Don Garber just found a prettier prom date, and that is New York City FC.
You think he's going to travel at all next year? He's going to stay in, you know, the Bronx.
He's just going to sit there just eating New York style pizza, just having it fed to him by virgins, and you know, whatever happens happens.
Hey, if you can find a virgin in the Bronx, more power to you.
Yeah, it's fair. We're going to come back and we'll talk a little bit more, and then we'll start talking about things in French. It's the Massive Report coming up next.
Everybody get together, try to love one another right now.
You know, the one thing Justin Bell wanted to make sure everybody knew was that the Cars were from Columbus.
Right on. They're not from Boston. Everyone thinks they're from Boston.
They're not from Boston. They're from Columbus.
You would think in a city with a band called the Cars, they would actually know how to drive.
You would think.
You would think that.
Yeah.
That's a good point, though. When as soon as it starts raining, everyone forgets how to drive here.
Yeah. Even before, I would say.
Do you know who complains the worst about Columbus traffic?
Who?
People who have never driven in any other city other than Columbus.
That's true. That is definitely true.
Really. If you've been
we
to
just
Phoenix,
got flashed.
If you've been
Jordan
to Phoenix
just flashed
when it rains,
us,
if you've
way.
Been to
oh,
Vegas
wow.
at any time, if you've been to Houston, if you've been to LA, anywhere else, Sydney, for crying out loud, is worse than Columbus.
Sydney cars has cars?
Sydney has cars.
Y'all apparently never drove in Cairo.
No, I've never driven in Cairo. I don't even know how to ride a camel.
So Jordan just walked by and flashed us, and then a guy who looked like Rudy from Fat Albert just walked by and just totally laughing his ass off.
That's amazing.
Street
this
theater. This is why I love Awesome Town.
This is why we can never remove this podcast. Because
can I say one more?
This window is just the window to the community right here.
I just want to say, like, you know, I went on a big rant that last segment. And I just want to say,
did you?
Yeah, I did. I think. Look, I truly believe in what Anthony Freeport wants for this team.
Yeah.
I truly, truly do. And it sucks that there's these bizarre headwinds that are, like, kind of, in my opinion, like, kind of stopping him from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but
yeah,
the crew will persevere.
Yeah, absolutely. We're in
a
good shape.
Is your spirit here, yeah?
All right, so.
We got good people around here.
Just before we move on, I just wanted to bring up something funny. Front page on MLSsoccer.com is how and why Jermaine Jones landed in New England. I attempted to click the link. It didn't work. Which could be the Wi-Fi here at Hendox, but I'm going to go with that's very, very telling on the part of MLS.
Or the fact that the screen on your computer seems to be peeling off.
It does seem to be peeling off.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy.
I tweeted a lot of things about this yesterday, but my favorite one was that now the allocation order is now going to be called the Prestige.
I tweeted that I'm more familiar with the rules for the reaping in the Hunger Games than I am for the MLS allocation
May
order.
May the odds ever be in New England's favor.
Yeah, exactly. The odds are never in our favor.
No.
All right, so let's talk about Exposition de Montreal. Oh, wait, no, that's L'Impact.
L'Impact.
My second favorite MLS
very
team.
Limp.
L'Impact. Let's talk about them. Bottom of the table in the East.
And overall.
I know. It's sad, quite honestly. The bottom of the table overall. Yeah, and I had a discussion where I was not in any sort of data range and could not remember if Chivas or Montreal was the worst team in the league at this point. It is Montreal for the one dude at work that I was talking to if he ends up deciding to listen to this podcast. But I kind of want to get everybody's thoughts, really, to start this out. And we're going to start with Greg this time because I always go to him third.
almost all the time. But, I'm actually very encouraged by this. Normally, an away game across a border or a long distance, I would be a little bit concerned. Montreal has been a little bit of a happy hunting ground for the crew in recent times.
Yeah.
They went there twice last year, got a tie and a win.
Yeah.
And played them once down here last year as well and picked up a 2-0 win, I believe.
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, back when Dominic Aduro was scoring. I remember those days well.
Yeah. For the crew.
For the crew, yeah. Well, I don't know what he's doing in Toronto because I only watch Columbus because, yeah, anyway. No, I'm kidding. I don't. I mean, I'm at the games. I don't need to watch them on TV. Even if I... Yeah, whatever. No, I am...
You could... Even if Bell Sports One were to expand there,
no. Normally, I'd be looking
it's a
very at
this exclusive
as,
club.
Normally, I'd be looking at this as a trap game. There are some places that Columbus doesn't travel well to.
Chicago,
they don't travel well to. Houston, they don't travel well to. Kansas City, they don't travel well to. Montreal, they travel very well to.
Seattle.
Yeah.
We won.
They did well
the last
in Seattle.
Two times in Seattle.
The last two Kick games in Seattle, ass. They've. They've won, so yeah, they do well. If only all
it's
places could be
that.
Seattle,
yeah.
As said by every Seattle fan ever. no, I'm actually looking forward to this one. I think the crew on the momentum that they've been building lately, in a place that they play fairly well already. No reason they can't come away with 3 points.
It's an interesting point before we go to the rest of the table here. An interesting point that there's only two teams right now on 4 wins. That would be the Chicago Fire and the Montreal Impact. The difference is that the Chicago Fire has managed to draw every other match that they've played.
Pretty much.
Almost every. But you know, it seems rather interesting because Montreal, if you flip the draw standings and the loss standings, Montreal could pretty much be in the same place Chicago is.
Yeah.
What do you think, Nate?
I think, first of all, question for the table, can Gall play in Canada?
That's a really good question.
Citizenship situation set up so that he came here and
he has a U.S. passport. He should be okay.
He has a U.S.
passport.
All right.
Well,
does
he have any drunk driving situations, you know, up in Canada that might keep him from going up there?
I'm not the expert.
Or in Indiana, for that matter.
he's half French anyway, so
good thing
he'll fit right in
Indy
Montreal.
11 don't
I
have
think
a
they'll just let him right in.
All right. Well, fair enough.
Maybe. I know that's not how customs work.
Yeah,
no, trust me, I know that's not how customs
That's work. A great question because I don't know. I would assume that once you get signed, you're pretty much green-lighted. I would guess there's some sort of agreement with the governments of those countries that you can work in both countries if you're signed by the league.
Green-lighted by the Don.
Green-lighted by the Don and by the potentate of immigration of Canada. That's what it is, right?
I was going back to the mafia analogy. From
Yeah, and I said potentate because I like to say that word.
Well, they've lost. So Montreal's lost 8 of 9.
Yes.
I mean, that's they've lost games like that goes back to the middle of like July, the 5th of July. So, yes. I mean, that's just awful, right?
And who did their one win come against?
I mean, they beat New York a couple weeks ago, actually.
I thought it was Chicago.
Was it Chicago?
It was Chicago.
Okay. Yeah, Chicago Fire.
I was actually setting that up so Saturday we could have another chuckle at the Fire's expense, now that we're not feeling sorry for them anymore.
Maybe I was. Maybe they just played New York, and I was like,
but they're in,
that
in CCL, too.
Last weekend they lost, yeah.
Yeah.
They are in CCL, and they won their CCL game.
Yeah.
So
they're probably
like I said
gonna
in the
advance.
Forecaster last week, I'm like, I think you just focus on that. And go forward, and that's play the Fire in New York in CCL as well. I mean, DeVio's still up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
They traded with they got McInerney from Philly, but who was it? Wenger went down and he scored two goals yesterday, and I don't know that McInerney's really broken out up there. Dily Duca
had an amazing goal against New York this past Saturday.
In his backyard.
Yeah. It's like whenever he goes to New Jersey, he just kills it.
Hmm. And I wonder why.
Dily Duca fist pump.
Them that home cooking.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll sell him to NYCFC or something.
You know what? He would do well playing for you know, he'd be a good replacement for Thierry Henry when... No.
Sorry.
But like...
I mean, I believed in Dily Duca for a long
crazy
time.
Here, Justin.
No. A replacement for... That was just funny, kind of funny.
Yeah, but he had a tremendous goal in that game.
Yeah.
And he looked very confident and capable and technical and all those great adjectives that everyone throws around. But
he was the player I was most excited about in whatever it was, 2011, when I was in Phoenix. And I was watching the Crew in preseason. And I always thought, you know, that there was another two or three games coming up really soon where Dily Duca was just going to shine for the Crew. And it kind of didn't work out. And, you know, now he's on, what, his third team since or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, maybe that's what all it'll take. But, no, I think the Crew come out with the win. You know, worst case with a tie up there. But
all right. So let's do that real quick. Sam, what are we at?
Because we're
at 4 minutes. We're 4 minutes left? Oh, wow.
That's like an eternity.
It really is like an eternity. Sorry, it was...
And yet
it
goes by so quickly.
Doing last-minute show prep. So let's talk about one more thing here real quick. Do you think the Crew get through the Montreal match with no cards? Can we go 4-for-4? Let's talk about
You know, by the way, speaking of no... We didn't talk about Giancarlo Gonzalez at all during this podcast.
Oh, holy crap, we didn't.
We didn't.
And actually, let's talk about Giancarlo Gonzalez, and then we'll do that.
Yeah, this is like...
$4.95 million is what's been reported at this point as the transfer fee.
Right.
Now, the Crew will only see roughly $2.75 million of that.
No, it's actually $17 and a $50 Starbucks gift card.
Oh, okay.
Is actually what the Crew get out
of the rest of it went to his old club in Norway, is the point that I was making.
Yes. Oh, I thought you were going to say it went to MLS.
No, it definitely goes to MLS.
No, MLS took MLS took their cut because girlfriends got to get.
And we deliver it to them in a blank envelope.
Hey. Justin Bell, he's here all week.
No, the
Well, wait for it.
Wait for it.
Wait for it.
There it is.
It was a phenomenal piece of business by the Crew. I mean, I don't,
absolutely.
I think.
Yeah, I agree.
You know. You can't say that you can't say they got better on the field by taking him by selling him today, like instantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, Wall had a great game. We mentioned that. I have complete confidence in Gehrig to play in the central defense, but that is absolutely astounding. Yes. And it's the kind of thing that can buoy the team for 2 to 3 years. That money in the allocation pool and the money that we need to spend on business operations per the league.
Right.
If it's a practice facility, if it's upgrades in the stadium, you know, however they see fit, that is just some kind of crazy return. And it's you know,
and I like the way that Berhalter explained it.
Mm-hmm.
Was that he was talking about how it's important to take that money, like how the rules allow them to take that money and invest it into the academy system, for instance, where they can come up with, say, two or three players, maybe develop two or three players who are like Will Trapp. I thought that was really smart for him to say that way. And if, you know, if that's the case, if that's what they do with this money, then, like I said, during the World Cup, it's like we might be seeing a circumstance where Giancarlo Gonzalez is literally the most important player in the history of the Columbus Crew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could build the turner,
you'd turn that into 3 and 4 fantastic crew players.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah,
that's
completely
fantastic.
Correct.
$5 million. I mean, $5 million for any player is a good money. If you can get it for a center back, you take the money and run.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Well, and what they invested, and the Crew are going to have to compete in a way in which they grow from the ground up. They're going to have to do it through the academies. Mm-hmm. And that's a fantastic way of doing it. He also pointed out that they got to do right by the players. You know, mm-hmm. players have to see this as an attractive
right.
place. We're not going to hold them down
yeah.
because we're in a playoff push. Man. Oh man, we gotta do everything we can. We didn't just sign the striker that we were trying to get, or a mixed discer that we were trying to get. And we really need you right now, and we're going to – I'm sorry, but this isn't in the best interest of the club. No, the long-term best interest of the club is to be a destination for players to be attractive.
Nate, that's the best thing that's been said on this podcast tonight was what you just said.
Thanks.
I mean, that is so true, and it's what we were talking about over the last couple of years about how – you know, when we were talking about, like, why won't players come to Columbus? Well, this is the reason why, is because, you know, Robert Orzea made it very difficult, and the previous ownership
yep.
made it very difficult for these players to see any value in coming to Columbus. And now...
it's completely changing.
It's changed.
It is.
180 degrees.
In like 12 months.
Yeah.
And I loved reading what Mick said about how he really appreciated the virtues of Columbus and everything.
Yeah,
and he appreciated the fans. And now we're seeing from kind of an organizational level a more player-friendly look, too. And there's no doghouse anymore. You know, RIP doghouse.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how long did Arrieta veg
well,
out
the
there?
Bingo hopper's gone.
That too, right.
MLS career.
Yeah.
What's that?
That's pretty much ended his MLS career. Arrieta being in the doghouse.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, and he went out and played for the Coast. Oh, by the way, Coast.
Hey, how about Nemanja Vukovic and... Sacramento Republic that just made the playoffs.
Yeah. Is he out there?
He was in his doghouse too.
Good for him.
Yeah.
By
well,
the
good
way.
On him. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
While I mention Arrieta, he
I don't know who that was, but I want her to be my friend now.
Jeepers creepers.
Yeah. Seriously,
someone just walked by and her name was Arrieta.
Yes.
But, the Costa Rican national team named players for the Copa Central America, and no Crew players were on it. So Waylon Francis and Jairo will be here for next couple of months. We won't lose them 2 or 3 games each for that tournament, which would be significant. I mean, especially Waylon Francis, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
The other thing about Giancarlo Gonzalez is he's going to a league where I think he's going to play. He's going to just...
he'll flourish.
Be awesome.
Yeah, he'll totally flourish.
You know, how we go back in over the last few weeks when we were talking about the way he was playing for the Crew and... you know, the player that I've said that he reminded me of was Marco Materazzi.
Yeah.
I mean, he has that, you know, Patrick Goldin said on Twitter, he's like, you know, he's sort of a familiar with the dark arts of Serie A.
Mm-hmm.
He has that nature within him, and I think he's going to be very, very, very
good. Well, good on the Crew for taking the money and running.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, he's a hell of a player, and yeah, he definitely upped his stock. But what do we pay for him? Like,
I saw $500,000. I think the league chipped in $250,000.
Yeah, but still, you've multiplied your investment by 4 times at least at that point.
Does anybody think that MLS probably pooped their pants when the Crew got an offer from Fulham for 3.5 and they turned it down?
Probably.
And then the offer comes from Palermo, you're like, what? Since when did they do that kind of business in Columbus?
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
I agree.
Which is just entertaining.
By the way, just to point out the elephant in the room, not only is...
I'm not that fat.
You have let yourself go a little bit.
The microphone adds 10 pounds.
The microphone... No, I was going to say, the fact that he went to Palermo, he gets to now play in the spotlight in Serie A and wearing pink.
Oh, that's the pink club.
Yeah.
The pink club.
That's right.
Palermo is the pink club.
Good on them.
So the pink Pipo jerseys will become a fixture in Columbus.
My indoor team.
I might wear pink.
I might just wear one myself. Because it never clashed with anything.
The Crew should totally have a pink third kit.
That'd be fantastic.
I mean,
you took the words right out of my mouth. I would be, wow. I would be all over that as the table.
I'd buy one
all over the floor.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
All right, hey, so let's go into score predictions here real quick because we're going to play Montreal on Saturday in Canada, their home and native land. What do you think, Justin?
I think we win 2-1.
All right, Nate.
I think for the first time all year, the Crew win a game 1-0.
All right, Sam.
Justin took my answer. 2-1.
2-1? All right, Greg.
3-1.
All right. Ira.
He stole my answer.
Yeah.
3-1.
Oh, you're supposed to say it in French and Ukrainian, and then all of a sudden Greg.
Yeah, Greg stole mine.
Yeah. What a dick.
Wow. I was going to ask. We had a new visitor here from Ray.
Yeah,
who disappeared. I was going to ask him what he thought.
Yeah, I was going to, too. He should come next time.
He'll come back, and he'll predict the Crew win.
Exactly.
Sure. 10 to the heartbeat.
What's your score prediction in Ukrainian? Because Greg already screwed it up in French.
That's fair. Я думаю, що ми виграємо 3-1.
All right, fair enough.
That was incredibly awesome.
Yes. It's not like she. It's not like that's actually her native language or anything. And then I'm going to go ahead and say my prediction, 2-0. That's my thought process on it. So let's wrap this thing up, put this thing to bed, yada, 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 all the things that I normally say in this situation. It's been another edition of this Massive Report podcast. Chris LaMacchia bailed out on us early because apparently he's engaged and his wife-to-be gets angry at him a lot. Sorry, Rachel, I love you. Sam Fahmy turned the gears. Nate Beckman was here. Said a lot of smart things. So did Justin Bell. Greg Benson, not so much. That's fine. My name is Matt Goschert. People say friends don't destroy one another.
What was that?
What do they know about friends?
Imagine that you're 60s songwriting genius Jimmy Webb. You've just penned a 7-minute psychedelic orchestral epic, but no one wants to sing it. Then you remember your drinking buddy, the famous actor. He can sing a bit.
Spring was never waiting for us, girl. It ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance.
Jimmy Webb is a genius. He's crafted this incredible record and decided to put a man who can't sing at the front of it. And it's all the better for it.
And we're pressed in love's hot fevered eye, like a striped pair of...
Jimmy Webb came over with a slew of songs, and Richard picked up MacArthur's Park and said to Jimmy Webb, "What's this?" He said, "Oh, that's no good. No, everybody's turned that down." And Richard said, "That's the one I want to do." I think they understood each other very well. That sort of wanting to do something that is not necessarily what the establishment recognised.
It wasn't just the establishment that didn't recognise it. It was anybody who owned a record player.
It polarises opinion because it's mad. It's as simple as that.
My jaw dropped open when I heard the line, "Someone's left the cake out in the rain."
I don't think I can take it.
It took so long to bake it.
And I'll never find the recipe again. It's the most ridiculous lyric ever.
How I read the way that Richard sang it was it's about love.
Could be like he's having a really bad day and his cake's got really wet, he's got a big soggy sponge, he's lost his recipe.
There were a lot of people, of course, who thought it was about drugs.
I can't see the connection with drugs whatsoever. I don't know where that one came from.
No connection to the drugs, but what the f*** is Richard Harris doing on the floor?
The structure of the song is phenomenal. And it was a 7-minute long single.
That's two records back to back. The DJ can go and have a Wes. Perfect.
For creating the finest one-hit wonder ever sung by an actor, Richard Harris, we salute you.
the legacy that Richard has left, among other things, will be MacArthur's Park.
It's almost like fine wine. It matures and you become aware of the fact that it's actually a work of genius. And it's a remarkable, remarkable record.